The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. My name is Jeremiah Jacques, and I'll be guest hosting today for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. And the program today is coming to you from the KPCG studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Well, I'd like to start off the show today by telling you the story of an American soldier named Samuel David Hawkins. He was actually born just a few miles from our studio here. He was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in 1933. And when Hawkins was just 16 years old, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. And he trained for a few months, and then he was deployed to Korea, where the Korean War was underway at that time. He spent several months fighting in the frozen mud against Chinese and North Korean troops. And then one day in 1950, he was wounded. Some shrapnel flew into his leg and he couldn't move. So Hawkins was captured by Chinese soldiers. He was made a prisoner of war. Well, as you would imagine, the conditions in the POW camp were difficult. The prisoners called the camp Death Valley, and it was a bleak and very cold and just a very challenging situation all around. It would drop to well below zero at night, and the compound was unheated. So Hawkins and some of his fellow comrades suffered frostbite. He lost one toe on his left foot to frostbite and the tips of several other toes. He and the other POWs were also covered with lice. They all had dysentery. So they were in some really terrible conditions. And not all of the POWs in the Death Valley compound survived. Several of Mr. Hawkins' fellow American soldiers died during their captivity there. And in order to trick the Chinese guards into leaving more food for the American POWs who were still alive, Mr. Hawkins would sometimes take the corpses of his fallen comrades and prop them up against the wall in their cell. And that way it looked to the Chinese like there were more mouths to feed. So they would, you know, leave extra food for them. Mr. Hawkins said the Americans were on a very thin line of survival in the camp. A few months later, Hawkins was moved to another POW camp where the conditions were better, and he spent the rest of the Korean War there, which was about 3 years. And then when the war finally ended in 1953, Hawkins was told that he was free to return to America. But he did something unexpected. He chose to kind of forget about the United States and to defect to China. It's not unheard of for individuals in times of conflict to defect to the other side. And these kinds of individual defections have not really been numerous enough to change the outcome of any wars, at least not in any of the examples that I've looked into. But what if it happens on a national level? What if a whole country defects to the other side? Well, that's what I wanted to take a look at on the Trumpet Daily today. There is a sobering trend underway in Asia of America's allies turning their backs on America and defecting to the Chinese side. And this has really picked up speed in recent months. By the way, toward the end of the program today, we'll come back to Mr. Hawkins' story and tell the rest of that. But this trend of America's Asian allies defecting to China is a really significant one. And it actually highlights three prophetically significant trends all at once. We'll get to the specifics of what those are a little later in the program, too. But before any of that, I just wanted to show that these national defections really are happening. Several countries in the region are unsure about the direction and the commitment of the United States. And at the same time, they're unable to ignore China's rapidly growing power and China's intensifying resolve and determination to use that power. So these nations, which have been aligned with the United States for decades, are now changing course. They're making a calculated decision to realign themselves with China, or to at least lay the groundwork to be able to do that very quickly in the future. The first of these nations that we'll talk about is nicknamed the Pearl of the Orient Seas. It's a country made up of more than 7,000 islands, and it's home to some of the most beautiful places I've had the privilege of visiting. We're talking about the Philippines. For decades, the Philippines has been one of America's most loyal allies in the region. Actually, it was all the way back in 1951 that the two signed a bilateral agreement for mutual defense. And that landmark agreement really tied those two nations together in an official way. And it made the Philippines one of just two American treaty allies in Southeast Asia. This alliance has been of immense benefit to the Philippines. You can see that in the hundreds of millions of dollars that America has given to Manila every year for things like military aid and development assistance and storm relief and things like that. And the alliance has also made the Philippines a pillar of U.S. foreign policy in the region. That relationship has held strong for many years, but in June, a new Philippine president came to power who doesn't have very much affection for America. His name is Mr. Rodrigo Duterte. And there are some admirable aspects to Mr. Duterte's method of leadership, but his main point of contention with the United States has been because, well, America has been critical of the way Mr. Duterte is carrying out his war on drugs in the Philippines. He has authorized the police and even the military and also vigilante groups to kill individuals who are suspected of drug trafficking or even drug use. And that's without the courts finding these people guilty of the charges. So this drug war is happening in a way that kind of circumvents aspects of the Philippines' constitution, and there's a potential for innocent people to be killed in it. And so for those reasons, the United States has criticized the human rights violations that are happening as a result of this drug war. And Mr. Duterte has been really just enraged by this criticism from America. And it seems like that's really what sort of intensified his anti-American sentiments. Back in September, he levied some profanity-laced insults at Mr. Barack Obama, who was president at that time. And Mr. Duterte also said that the U.S. military should prepare to get out of the Philippines. And then about a month after that, Mr. Duterte was speaking to his government officials about the situation when Russia had annexed the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine. And he said that when that happened, America, quote, wasn't able to do anything, end quote. So the implication was that America's security assurances to its partners and friends are worthless. Now, there is a pretty big difference in the U.S.'s relationship with Ukraine and its relationship with the Philippines. With Ukraine, America doesn't have an official alliance. Ukraine is not a NATO member or anything like that. But nevertheless, America had signed an agreement with Ukraine, just basically saying that America would help to defend Ukraine's borders. And yet the U.S. didn't do anything to help Ukraine when that situation with Crimea happened there. So Mr. Duterte was just saying, look at that. You know, America's security assurances are worthless. And really, Mr. Duterte is not the only person that felt that way. He's not the only one that felt alarmed by America's lack of action in Ukraine. In that same meeting, Mr. Duterte talked about the Philippines' defense treaty with the U.S., and he asked his government officials, quote, do you really think we need it? End quote. Do you really think we need to stay friends with America? Do we really need to rely on Washington for our defense? Those statements were pretty shocking to a lot of American analysts and leaders. But then the next week, Mr. Duterte visited Chinese President Xi Jinping in China, and he just ramped up his rhetoric to a new extreme. he announced what he called his country's separation from the United States, and he announced that there would be a realignment with China. Here's what he said. Quote, "America has lost now. I've realigned myself with China's ideological flow. And maybe I will go to Russia and talk to Putin and tell him that there are three of us against the world, China, the Philippines, and Russia. It's the only way." End quote. So those are some pretty chilling words when you consider how much the Philippines and America have benefited from their partnership over the years, and how much of a pillar of America's foreign policy the Philippines has been for so long. It is important to know that a little while after that trip to China, some of the top brass in the Philippines military kind of pressured Mr. Duterte about the dangers of totally severing ties with America. And so Mr. Duterte did end up softening some of those anti-US sentiments. He said he didn't really mean that he wants a complete severance of ties with America, but only a more independent foreign policy so that he can build a closer relationship with China. So he did partially backtrack on some of those words, but nevertheless, despite that partial backtracking, Mr. Duterte's actions have made clear that he is willing to sacrifice the Washington-Manila relationship in order to tilt toward China. In December, the Philippine military canceled some joint Philippine-U.S. patrols. The purpose of those patrols was to monitor Chinese vessels near the Philippines' territorial waters. And then Mr. Duterte also canceled some joint exercises with the American military. And he announced that he would buy military armaments from China instead of from the United States. Another major development came a short time later when Mr. Duterte declined to acknowledge a really big victory that the Philippines had won against China in an international court at The Hague. The background on this was that China claimed sovereignty over some 80% of the vast and very resource-rich South China Sea. And parts of that sea are also claimed by the Philippines, and also by Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei, and Taiwan. And since 2012, Chinese island building and vessel movement in this area have pushed deep into territory that clearly belongs to the Philippines. And this kind of activity poses a serious challenge to the rules-based global order. And so that's what led up to this high-profile 2016 court case. And the court in The Hague basically ruled that the maritime territories in question lawfully belong not to China, but to the Philippines. And so Mr. Duterte's decision to basically ignore that ruling was pretty astounding. It really equated to kind of an act of just deep submission by the Philippines submitting to Beijing. And incidentally, when you place Mr. Duterte's decision to ignore that court ruling alongside China's massive military buildup, it's pretty clear that China could very soon declare an air defense identification zone over most, if not all, of the South China Sea. And that's a really sobering possibility. Mr. Duterte has also told Chinese officials that he would be happy to share any oil that may be found in these disputed regions with China. And he's signed a whole series of sizable deals with China worth tens of billions of dollars. All of these moves demonstrate that even if Mr. Duterte is unable to accomplish an immediate and total separation from the United States, he is still eager to drastically reduce the Philippines' reliance on America. These moves show that he really is serious about tilting the Philippines steeply toward China. Well, after America's transition from President Obama to President Trump, there was a lot of hope that Mr. Duterte might reverse his shift. After all, Mr. Trump wasn't the one who criticized those human rights violations over Mr. Duterte's drug war, which is really what seemed to be the thing about the Obama administration that had so infuriated him. but so far no indication has really emerged of a U.S.-Philippines detente. In fact, about 10 days into Mr. Trump's presidency, Mr. Duterte asked the U.S. not to store weapons in Philippine camps, which it was allowed to do under a certain defense pact. Mr. Duterte said he doesn't want Manila to become entangled if any fighting erupts between China and the United States, so he wanted those weapons out of there. And that's not the kind of action that a willing treaty ally would take. A willing treaty ally would not speak of potential fighting between the U.S. and China as something that it's detached from and as something that it intends to remain, you know, uninvolved with. I've got a quote here from Jay Batongbakal. He's the head of the Institute for Maritime Affairs and Law of the Sea at the University of the Philippines. And he thinks that under President Trump, the U.S.-Philippines relationship will actually only get worse. He said, quote, "If Trump's America First plan is taken to its logical conclusion, then the U.S. will become much more demanding of the Philippines in the future when it comes to military cooperation to address the South China Sea and terrorist threats," end quote. And I think Mr. Batongbakal is right about that. And Mr. Duterte's track record makes clear that he would not respond well at all to a more demanding America. There's another quote here from James Hasek. He's a senior fellow at the Brent Scowcroft Center on International Security. Mr. Hasek is basically saying that if Duterte's shift away from America and toward China continues, it could seriously undermine America's ability to challenge Beijing in international waters. Here's what he said. Quote, "If the Philippine federal government declared its bases off limits in a war between the U.S. and China, the U.S. Air Force could find itself bereft of any airfields within fighter range of the South China Sea," end quote. So that would really just undermine America's ability to stand up to China in the event of such a conflict. So anyway, the takeaway from this is that the Philippines is suddenly tilting away from the United States and toward China. And if that were happening only in the Philippines, maybe it wouldn't be so serious. But there are several other nations where this same trend is well underway. The next one that I'd like to get into a little bit is a country that was under British control for several decades during the days of the British Empire. Even though it's not a huge amount of land, This nation is on the very short list of countries that biologists consider to be mega diverse. It actually contains an estimated 20% of all Earth's animal species. And in terms of religion, this country is a little bit unusual among Asian nations because it is a majority Muslim country. This country is Malaysia. Just days after Mr. Duterte's astounding statements that we talked about when he talked about seeking a separation from America, well, the Prime Minister of Malaysia expressed pretty much the exact same sentiments for his country. Just before he left for a visit to China, the Prime Minister of Malaysia, his name is Najib Razak, he said, quote, "We will be signing many new agreements and understandings that will elevate the relationship between our two nations to even greater heights," end quote. And then Mr. Najib took it a step further. In a statement that I found to be pretty bizarre, he said that he is grateful for the way China has, quote, "created benefits not just for the people of our two nations, but also for regional stability and harmony," end quote. So he says China has created regional stability and harmony. If you've had an eye on the South China Sea over the last few years and all of China's bullying behavior there, you know that this statement is not grounded in reality. So it really looks like this statement was designed to kind of, flatter the Chinese leadership. Mr. Najib fears China, and justifiably so, especially as he sees the United States kind of retreating from Asia. And so he's resorting to kind of flattering this intimidating nation that he fears in order to try to curry favor with it. So he says, China has created regional stability and harmony, but it really goes beyond talk. When Mr. Najib arrived in Beijing, he signed a deal to buy a sizable quantity of Chinese naval patrol vessels, and this deal marked a milestone development. It was actually Malaysia's first ever big defense deal with China. It was a landmark event. And then on November 2nd, a few days after that big defense deal, Mr. Najib made a statement that again sounded very much like the recent rhetoric that we've heard from the president of the Philippines. This statement from Mr. Najib was directed at the United States and also the UK, it seems. And Mr. Najib said, quote, "It is not for colonial powers to lecture countries they once exploited on how to conduct their own internal affairs today." End quote. Until very recently, Malaysia had a very favorable view of the United States and a thriving relationship with Washington. The two have been close diplomatic partners and allies for many years. The U.S. has been the largest foreign investor in Malaysia, and they've enjoyed strong security cooperation between the two sides. And then on the other side of the coin, for so long, Malaysia has viewed China as a bullying nation, a nation that illegally claims its territory in the South China Sea. But now, somewhat suddenly, the Malaysian leadership says America has basically only just been exploiting them, and Washington is not justified in telling them to be cautious about tilting toward China. Now, somewhat suddenly, the Malaysian leadership is doing major military deals with China instead of with the United States. What a drastic change all of this is. Richard Haydarian is an analyst of Asian geopolitical affairs. He said in a recent article that in the case of both the Philippines and Malaysia, the realignments are alarming because they represent such drastic and really abrupt about faces. He said, quote, "This is a dramatic turn of events since not only are the Philippines and Malaysia considered as staunch strategic partners of the West, but they have also been caught in a bitter territorial dispute with China, which has rapidly expanded its footprint across the South China Sea." End quote. That was an article written in November of last year, and in that analysis, Mr. Haydarian also said that there was a lot of concern among analysts and Asia watchers that more defections to China would follow. He said, quote, "Put together, Najib's and Rodrigo Duterte's back-to-back visits to Beijing have provoked panic in some Western capitals, with observers causally warning about a wave of defections among traditional Western partners now pivoting to China." End quote. Well, the very next month, this feared wave of defections gathered a lot of momentum. That happened when another nation, another of America's major partners, made a landmark announcement. Because of this next country's natural beauty and its unusually friendly people, it has earned the nickname the Land of Smiles. This country is also the one that the Siamese cat comes from. And it's one of just 14 countries that currently has a king. They actually just had a new king ascend to the throne in October of 2016. Maybe you've guessed what it is. The country that we're talking about is Thailand. Back in 1954, the U.S. and Thailand signed the Manila Pact of the former Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. This pact, alongside another deal called the Thanat-Rus Communique, and then another one called the Joint Vision Statement for the Thai-U.S. Defense Alliance, all three of these have really welded the United States and Thailand together as official treaty allies. And for decades, that alliance has been unshakable. But then in 2014, Thailand's army launched a coup d'etat, and this coup overthrew the country's government. That was the government that the people had democratically elected. And the military, after it overthrew the elected government, they established a junta to rule in its place. This military junta ended up repealing parts of Thailand's constitution. It dissolved Thailand's parliament. It declared martial law. And it also established a nationwide curfew. It ended up outlawing political gatherings. The junta also has arrested numerous anti-coup activists. And it has pretty much totally taken control over Thailand's media. Well, when all these changes were happening, as you would expect, the United States expressed a lot of concern. The U.S. leadership was worried about the junta's human rights violations. The U.S. was worried about Thailand's suppression of democracy and those kinds of things. And eventually, Washington ended up freezing all of the security aid and defense aid that it sends to Thailand. And this was very substantial aid and assistance that America has been giving to Thailand for decades in order to help keep the relationship strong. And at the time, America said U.S.-Thai relations could return to normal only after democracy is restored in Thailand. Well, the U.S.-Thai relationship remained very strained for the next couple of years. And then we come to December 2016, just a couple of months ago, and the month after the Philippines and Malaysia had done those abrupt about faces, turning away from the U.S. and toward China. In December, an assembly of officials from Thailand traveled to Beijing. And in stark contrast to all of that sermonizing that they'd been hearing from America about human rights violations and suppression of democracy and all of those kinds of things, in stark contrast to all of that, China was utterly unconcerned about these kinds of issues. China never cares a lick about those kinds of things. That's evident in the way, you know, the nation of China itself is operated. Well, Thailand was obviously won over to China during that trip, because after it ended, Thailand announced that it will soon be developing a major joint military production facility with China. And then in the weeks since then, Thailand has made several similar decisions. Thai leaders signed a deal to buy a sizable quantity of VT-4 tanks from China. They also signed a major agreement that makes the Chinese consultants on Thailand's development of heavy weaponry. The air forces of China and Thailand have also held their first ever joint exercises. And then Thailand selected China for a multi-billion dollar contract to build its first submarines. Thailand's never had military submarines before, and now they want some, and they're buying them not from America, but from China. Bangkok and Beijing have also taken steps to collaborate on military training, personnel exchanges, and anti-terrorism cooperation. So these are some major developments. And the fact that Thailand is a treaty ally of America makes this a major black eye for Washington. Now, it is possible that U.S.-Thai relations will warm again after Thailand has elections, which the junta has promised will take place in 2018. But by that time, it's possible that Beijing's tightening grip won't leave a whole lot of room for the United States to wiggle back in to Thailand. It might be too late. Well, we'll have a short break now, and after we're back, we'll discuss one more U.S. partner that is somewhat suddenly defecting to China. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial here in Edmond, Oklahoma, and the live stream is available at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Jeremiah Jacques standing in today for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. This is KPCG-FM. You can listen in online at kpcg.fm. In the first half of the show, we discussed the trend of America's Asian allies and partners suddenly realigning themselves with China, effectively defecting to the Chinese side. We talked about this happening in both of America's Southeast Asian treaty allies, the Philippines and Thailand, and also about the same thing happening in Malaysia, which has been a very strong partner to the United States for many years. For the second half here, I'd like to start off showing that the exact same thing is happening in another Asian nation that has also been a close partner to America for many years. This country is the world's number one exporter of cashews, a very delicious nut. It's also the world's second largest coffee-producing nation. We're talking about Vietnam. Ever since the mid-1990s, the U.S. and Vietnam have had a close relationship. And even as recently as 2014, it seemed that Vietnam's fear of China was intense enough and strong enough to keep Vietnam really firmly in America's corner. That summer, China's state-owned oil company placed an oil drilling rig in waters that belonged to Vietnam. And this move sparked some very serious tensions and protests, and it culminated in a few Vietnamese and Chinese fishing boats ramming into each other. Well, the United States at that time pounced on the opportunity to strongly condemn China and also to back Vietnam's pro-Western government by, you know, helping to upgrade Vietnam's military and lend support in any way that it could. The diplomat, a very respectable source, said at that time that the flare-up in tensions was so serious that it meant Vietnam-China relations had, quote, passed the point of no return, end quote. So it looked like nothing could come between the U.S. and Vietnam. And it was a very valuable relationship for America and for U.S. foreign policy. But then in January of last year, January 2016, the situation began to drastically change. At that time, Vietnam held its 12th National Congress, and the outcome of that was that the pro-Western Vietnamese faction was basically taken out of power. And it was replaced by a very China-friendly faction called the Communist Party of Vietnam. The Communist Party of Vietnam is headed by a man named Nhan Phu Trong. And back in 2014, when those tensions between China and Vietnam were so high, even past the point of no return, as the diplomat said, Mr. Nhan Phu Trong was very reluctant to criticize China's aggressive behavior. He seemed to know even then that it was not wise to be too critical of that, and that it would be wise to try to appease China. So when he became Vietnam's most powerful man in 2016, that began a rapid Vietnamese tilt toward China and away from the United States. In January of this year, Vietnam's reorientation to China was on full display when Mr. Trong visited Beijing for 4 days. The Chinese president, Mr. Xi Jinping, he staged a state-level welcoming ceremony for Mr. Trong, and their meeting resulted in a joint communique stressing both nations' commitment to bolstering strategic cooperation in all kinds of areas. The diplomat had to admit a bit of error when all of this happened. They said basically that they had been wrong before when they said that, you know, the Chinese-Vietnamese relationship was past the point of no return, and they were very surprised. And the diplomat was not alone. Back in 2014, all kinds of analysts said China and Vietnam hate each other more than ever, and they'll never be friends. But then all of that quickly changed. After Mr. Trong's visit to China in January, the diplomat said the visit, quote, underscored a major shift in Chinese-Vietnamese bilateral relations, end quote. The diplomat said that that trip shows that Vietnam, quote, seems to anticipate certain obstacles to its partnership with Washington under President Trump, particularly now that Mr. Trump has withdrawn the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, end quote. And when Mr. Trump withdrew from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, it really made a lot of America's partners and allies quite unsure about the U.S.'s reliability. Vietnam was not the only nation by any means, but Vietnam was high on that list. Writing for Forbes, Ralph Jennings, he's a really astute Asia analyst, he said the leadership transition in America, the shift from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, is not likely to improve U.S.-Vietnam relations, but it actually looks like that transition will further strain those relations. Mr. Jennings said, quote, compared to the still new U.S. administration, China feels comfortably predictable to Vietnam, end quote. Comfortably predictable. You could describe U.S. President Donald Trump as many things, but comfortably predictable is certainly not one of them. And nations like Vietnam are extremely uncomfortable with all of that, you know, uncertainty surrounding the Trump administration. So they're distancing themselves from America even more in some ways now that Mr. Trump has come into power. And then in China, they see an element of stability and predictability and just kind of a steady course. It's a stark contrast. They do fear China, but at least they know Beijing's goals. They know that those goals are set, and they know that China's direction is fairly steady. So here we have Vietnam reorienting toward China. Well, before we discuss the three Bible prophecies that are being partly fulfilled by this trend, I just wanted to briefly mention that this same shift away from America and toward China is also happening to varying degrees in Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar. We won't have time to get into the details for those nations, but it's sort of the same story, although it's not as advanced, it's not as far along as is the case in the four nations that we covered. At first glance, this trend may appear to be driven by these smaller Asian nations' affinity or increasing fondness for China. And that might factor into the calculus of Mr. Duterte and some of the others to a small degree, but these course changes are happening mostly because the Asian nations are pragmatic and they are acutely aware of America's decline and China's rise. There was a strategy report recently written by Ross Babbage. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments there in Washington, D.C. And in this report, Mr. Babbage wrote, quote, "In effect, Beijing is pressuring regional countries into an arrangement that mirrors the contract struck with its own people. Economic benefits in exchange for political compliance, with a big stick lurking in the background, threatening retaliation for aberrant behavior. Significant damage is being done to the U.S. and allied credibility. In the absence of major changes in allied policy, much of Southeast Asia will likely shift into Beijing's orbit." End quote. So these Asian nations see China brandishing its big stick in the background, as Dr. Babbage says there. And they also see that the United States can no longer be relied upon to protect them from that big stick. So they're making a calculated realignment. You know, if you can't beat China because America's withdrawing and becoming unreliable, then join China. That's the thinking that really looks to be driving this trend. Now, it is possible that Mr. Trump could make recovering U.S. leadership in Southeast Asia a priority for his administration. He could attempt some major changes to demonstrate U.S. military superiority in that region. He could do that to try to win back the confidence of America's allies in the region. But if these nations feel jilted by America, which really seems to be the case, then it may be too late for that kind of attempt. If they feel like America is subject to drastic changes every 4 or 8 years, depending on how the U.S. presidential elections go, then they might feel like they just can't deal with that roller coaster, you know, with all those twists and turns and highs and lows, just all of that uncertainty. And as we mentioned earlier, this development highlights three prophetically significant trends all at once. First, the decline of American power. Second, the coming together of what the Bible calls the kings of the East. And third is the rise of China's might, which is part of the times of the Gentiles, the way it's referred to in biblical language there. The deterioration of America's power, the first of these trends, was prophesied decades ago by the world-renowned writer and educator, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong. Just after America's failed invasion of Cuba back in 1961, Mr. Armstrong pinned the blame for America's crushing failure not on the U.S. military or even on the Kennedy administration. He pinned the blame on the American people because of their rebellion against God's law. Mr. Armstrong wrote, quote, "Unless or until the United States as a whole repents and returns to what has become a hollow slogan on its dollars, 'In God We Trust,' the United States of America has won its last war. The God America has deserted gave it its most humiliating defeat. What does the Cuban debacle mean? It means, Mr. and Mrs. United States, that the handwriting is on your wall." That was from The Plain Truth, from October of 1961, just after that Bay of Pigs fiasco had happened. And Mr. Armstrong could see that America's power was crumbling and that the nation's power was deteriorating. He made those statements with confidence because they were based on biblical prophecy. The Bible explains very plainly what God would do with America's will to use its vast might if the country rejected God's law. In Leviticus 26, verse 19, through his prophet, God tells the people that would later become the American nation, that if they reject him, then, quote, "I will break the pride of your power," end quote. So these people would still have plenty of power. The power itself wouldn't be broken, but the pride of it, or the will to use it, would be broken. That's what God was telling the people, those people who would later become America. In the decades since 1961, when Mr. Armstrong wrote those words, the people of America have only continued their, you know, rejection of God's law. They've only intensified their disdain for that law. And as a result, in the time since then, America has inserted itself into dozens of military conflicts of all kinds, but each one of them has been kind of a half-hearted campaign. And each one of them has just drained a little bit more of the U.S.'s pride in its power. Mr. Gerald Fleury is the host of the Key of David program here on KPCG, and he has also written and spoken extensively about this broken will. Back in September of 2012, the Benghazi, Libya attacks happened, and four American citizens were killed in the U.S.'s diplomatic mission there, including U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens. And that was an act of war. That terrorist attack happened on the anniversary of the 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center. It was designed to be the ultimate insult to the United States. But what did Washington do in response? Did America use its power with pride to answer that really egregious insult? No, the U.S. leadership actually apologized for the production of some video that was not even actually related to the attack. It was a very shameful response. And at that time, right after that happened, Mr. Fleury said the U.S.'s shameful reaction to the Benghazi attack meant that the Leviticus 26:19 prophecy had then been fully fulfilled. He said, quote, "It's no longer God saying, 'I will break the pride of your power.' It's now God has broken it. I've never seen America in such a low as this." End quote. So that was a really pivotal moment. The pride in American power was broken. And most Americans today may not really accept that, you know, they may not really accept that America's will to use its power is broken, especially since we have a new president, quite unlike the last one. But America's Asian partners can see it clearly. They can see it very clearly, and as a result, these Asian states are rallying around China. And that brings us to the second of the prophetic trends that is being partly fulfilled by this move of Asian nations from America to China. Revelation 9:16 speaks of an Asian army that will be formed in the future, and this army will be comprised of 200 million soldiers. Another passage in Revelation, in chapter 16, calls this huge force the kings of the East. The plural kings there signals that this will be a multinational force. It's not just one nation, but it's a whole block of many Asian nations, and they all rally together. And if you look at other Bible passages, like the one in Ezekiel 38, you'll find a lot more details about this Asian military block that will soon form. And Ezekiel 38 even gets into some specifics about which nations will be a part of it. And it says that it will be led by Russia. And the strong implication is that China will be in sort of a number two position. So also in a leadership, but underneath Russia. And then several other Asian nations will sort of fall in line under Russia and China. So today, when we see several Asian nations sort of rallying behind China, that's really laying the foundation for that Kings of the East prophecy to be fulfilled in a pretty dramatic way. It is the Asian nations coming together, pooling their resources, and laying the groundwork for the formation of that future multinational Asian power bloc. And then the third prophecy being fulfilled is closely connected to the last one, and it is what the Bible calls the times of the Gentiles. That was actually a term that Jesus Christ himself used. It's recorded in the Gospel of Luke. And if you look at the context there, you can see that this is basically a shift in power away from Great Britain and America, which have been the main powers for the last many decades. And it's a shift away from them and toward two main power blocks, really. One revolving around Germany and the other revolving around those kings of the East, Russia and China. So for these prophesied times of the Gentiles to happen, for that dramatic power shift to happen away from the U.S. and the U.K. toward Germany, but also toward the Eastern nations, for that to happen, there has to be a shift of power to China. And so when we see these Asian nations pulling away from America and tilting suddenly toward China, you can really see that it is making China more powerful, and it is leading to the fulfillment of those times of the Gentiles. So there you have it. Three biblically prophetic trends are being fulfilled all at once by these Asian states pulling away from America and kind of defecting to China. And I think that's pretty remarkable to be able to see three of those trends happening all at once like that. Well, before we come to the end here, I wanted to quickly finish telling about the young American soldier from Oklahoma City, Samuel David Hawkins. As we covered in the first half, when he had just turned 17, he was fighting in the Korean War, and he was captured by Chinese troops and kept in POW camps for about 3 years. And then when that war finally ended, instead of going back to his country, which he was free to do at that time, he decided to defect to China. That was in 1953. And most of America was in the grip of anti-communist fervor at that time. So Mr. Hawkins' decision really shocked the United States. But for him, it was really just the kind of impulsive decision of a very young person who didn't understand much about the world. It was also the result of a lot of indoctrination. In one of the camps where he was kept, he had to listen to 6 to 7 hours a day of the Chinese just, you know, lecturing him about the glories of Marxism and the evils of capitalism. And so at the time when he had to choose whether to go home or to defect to China, he decided to go to China. So he went to Beijing. He took classes at the People's University of China in Beijing, and he married a Russian woman, and he got what he thought was a really good job as a mechanic. And then after about 3 years in China, Mr. Hawkins decided to move back home to the United States. Another important detail here is that Mr. Hawkins never fought against the United States in any way. You know, he never even disliked his country. So I don't mean to paint him in too bad of a light because of his impulsive decision. And that also shows that his story is certainly not a perfect analogy to what's happening with America's Asian allies on the national level. But when Mr. Hawkins came back to the U.S., he eventually moved to California, where he's still living today. The U.S. Army gave him a dishonorable discharge. And then back in 2011, he was interviewed by the BBC. And here's what he said he learned from the whole experience. Quote, "The one big thing I learned about going to China was how lucky we are here in the U.S. Our government's not perfect, but I think it's one of the best in the world. So I learned so much. I learned to be a better American. If nothing else, I'm a real patriot." End quote. So for Mr. Hawkins, the story didn't turn out too bad, mostly because of the tolerance and the lenient nature of the United States. But for these Asian nations that we have been talking about, these nations that we now see defecting to China, Bible prophecies show that the result will not be nearly so gentle for them. We have some very powerful books explaining what those results will be, and they also explain the three trends of Bible prophecy that we touched on today. So I would really recommend that you take a look at the United States and Britain in prophecy, and also Russia and China in prophecy. Both of these books are free. If you just go to thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab, and then you'll see them in the list there. You can read them free online, or we would also be happy to send you a hard copy of both of them at no charge to you. And if you order those and study those, you can really understand the whole story of what's going on there. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG FM 101.3 on the FM dial here in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available all around the world by typing KPCG FM into your internet browser. And please send us your feedback, your questions, and your comments. Our email address is td@kpcg.fm. Well, thank you for joining us today, and please tune in again and join us on Monday when your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury, will be back.